All right, guys, well, what an incredible story, man. Let's just praise God for what we're seeing in our church and what he's up to among our leaders and in our groups and just among all the folks here at Mercy Hill. Hey, guys, if you're brand new with us, we are in week two of a new series called The Greatest Commandment. And we want to make sure that you guys have the companion guide that goes with this series. So right now, across all of our locations, no matter where you are, guys, if you did not grab one of these last week, you weren't here last week, and I want to make sure I say this, y'all, man, we live in a fast-paced culture. There's no shame in I wasn't here or whatever. Like, let's just get one. Right now, at all of our campuses, if you'll raise your hand, we have people that are going to come forward, and they're going to make sure that you guys have one of these booklets. And this booklet is, like I said, it's really just kind of a companion for you for the next few weeks in this series. It's just going to give us an opportunity to take sermon notes. There's vision. There's opportunity for us to really respond and see what the Lord is doing. So we want to make sure you guys have an opportunity to do that. So as you guys are passing those out and getting that kind of all set up, I also wanted to update you. We had an incredible weekend at the new site for the Ridge campus. It's going to be the new home and hub for Mercy Hill last weekend. I want to show you guys some pictures. It was awesome. There were different stations. You got to hear vision. People got to write their prayers for what we're praying to see God do on the stage. You got to kind of see the scope and the magnitude of what we're moving into in terms of the new home and hub and how we think it's going to carry the movement forward. And one of the things I wanted to say, just kind of thinking about that, I don't know exactly how many people came through. Hundreds of people came through. It was a really cool event. But one of the things I think is important for us to realize is that buildings are tools at Mercy Hill, okay? A building is not in our scorecard in terms of square footage means success or something like this. It's just a tool that facilitates growth, and that growth facilitates sending. Our church growing is the currency for our church being able to send people out to the nations. There is a real connection. I know sometimes this is kind of tough because you think about, man, a building and how does that really affect things? And be honest with you guys, if I was doing ministry in North Africa or in South Asia, this may not be the tool that I would grab for, okay? But in our culture, and especially in a church kind of culture, people understand, and there is a real value in having a place where more than 400 or 500 people can gather. There is a big connection, in other words, between the stage and sending. If we want to end up seeing church planters go out, we're going to need to see more people come in. You know, at the 10-year mark at Mercy Hill, I had the opportunity to kind of look back through our numbers, and I don't have to give you all the specifics, but here's what I realized. Man, for every one person that we have sent out as a missionary from this church, there were about 10 people that were baptized. And then I went further and I realized, and actually for every one person that was baptized, there was about 10 people that went by the tent, first time guest, and that had come and were a first time guest. And so it really clicked in my mind. The lead is the first time guest and people being able to come in. The lag ultimately is being able to send out to hard places, unreached places, and to church planting. In other words, if it's 10 to 1, 10 to 1, okay? If we want to see one church planter go out and missionary go out, we need to see about 100 people come in the doors for the first time. And that's what this new opportunity, this new building is going to help us to be able to do, along with a lot of other things, okay? I thought this was really cool, and I did get his permission to share this, but I wanted to show you what my son wrote on the stage at the new building. On the land, we had an opportunity to write our prayer request out. Now, think about it. We're writing it on the stage, and what did he write at 12 years old? He writes, "I pray for Rachel and Josiah's church plant." He got the gift of writing in tongues just like I did, okay? So, but you could read it, and I love to see that connection in even the young people in our church, because that is what we're going after. Man, it's not just about growing a big thing here. It's about growing here in order that we can send there into hard places, and so that was really encouraging to me. I hope it is to you. So anyway, hey, this is what it's all about. Now, what are we in right now? We're in a sermon series called The Greatest Commandment. And this is the midpoint of our deeper initiative. The funding for our 2 years of our ministry budget, the new home and hub, the Ridge campus, and a few really cool ministry initiatives that will come right on the heels of us moving in terms of the regional campus, moving to the Ridge campus. All of that is wrapped up in a discipleship initiative called Deeper. And right now we are 1 year in to the Deeper initiative, where we are sacrificing, man, we're giving, we're asking God, I want to give in a way that reflects who you are to me. You're my deepest desire. And as we give, we're seeing ministry go forward. We're seeing things like the Ridge Campus be built. Ultimately, that will facilitate more sending and a lot of things, other things that we love at Mercy Hill. So if you're new, I just want to make sure you know that's where we are. The Greatest Commandment series is, it's kind of a little funny. It's based in Mark 12, although that's not where we're preaching from, okay? Mark 12 is the Greatest Commandment. Love God with everything you have and love others as yourself. What we're doing is we're taking that commandment of Jesus and then I'm grabbing some other places in the scripture to flesh out those ideas, okay? And so what we're gonna do this week is we're gonna go to Genesis chapter 22 and we're gonna talk about one of the most notable stories in all of the Bible. And it's the most notable, one of the most notable, and the reason it is because I think it is one of the most noteworthy. This is a story that sort of changes everything. It's a story that is shocking. It's a story that's almost hard. It's a story, listen, this is how it works sometimes in the faith. It's a story that Christians cling to as their hope, but people on the outside want to throw rocks and maybe say it's not even why they don't even want to be a Christian because of a story like this, all right? So it's very galvanizing, maybe, to say. It's the story of Abraham as he goes to sacrifice and is told by God to sacrifice his son Isaac. And we're going to talk about all this and all the implications from it. But here's the deal. The story at its ground level, at the very bottom of it, is a story about trust. It's a story about faith. You know, at Mercy Hill, one of the things that we try to do is say, hey, if you come in at Mercy Hill and you stick with us, you can't do that and not change. All right, we are about growth. Man, I'm about growth in my life. I wanna grow in my faith. I wanna grow in my leadership, being a dad, being a husband. I wanna grow financially in the way I think about giving. I wanna grow in all that stuff in my life. And we attract people that are kind of that way as well. I mean, think about it. Do you wanna grow? Do you want to be in the same place this year, next year, as you are this year? I don't want to be there. I don't want our church to be there. You know, one of the key ingredients for growth, it is learning to trust that what God is doing is good. Even when we don't understand it, to trust that what he is doing for us is good, because here's what that enables us to do. It enables us to begin to transfer things into his hand, to take our death grip off of it and to give him things, our life, our health, our marriage, our money, to put things in God's hand and say, I trust you with this as you're calling me to give it to you. But it takes a lot of trust. I remember, and this is the second time I've mentioned him in one sermon, but I remember when my son, AP, was super young, 5 or 6 years old, he got double pink eye, okay? And this was one of those deals where me and Anna had not experienced the bad pink eye, and it was like, oh, it'll be okay until he wakes up and this, you know, his eyes look like fists, and he can't see at all, and it's really bad and nasty and all that. Well, he gets up one morning, and when I say he can't see, I mean, his eyes were swollen all the way shut, like they were just fists in his eyes. And it was shocking to me with him because I tried to get him to open his eyes. He wouldn't do it. It was painful. The light was painful. He didn't want to open his eyes. He didn't want medicine in his eyes. And so within about 10 minutes of waking up, he had just resigned himself to blindness. I mean, seriously, I mean, your kids are resilient. I mean, he was just like, well, this is my life now, okay? Dad, can you just fix my, cereal and I'll sit in here and maybe I can just listen to the Ninja Turtles, okay? I won't watch it this morning. I mean, it was kind of crazy. He just moved right along. And, you know, obviously as a dad, I'm like, no, you know, we're going to get in the bath. We're going to try to, you know, get some warm and all this. And here's what I was trying to do. I was trying to coach him and coax him and get his, listen, the end of this story is he opened his eyes, we got medicine, and he heals. But the foundation of that story is I'm trying to get his trust. You've been there with kids. He's got to get to this place, he's 5 or 6 years old, and sometimes you have to do this. You have to do things to kids they don't love. But what I was trying to do is get him to that place where he would say, I trust what you're saying more than I trust myself. I trust what you're saying more than I'm afraid of the pain that's going to come from seeing the light. And of course, that happened in his life, but I thought about that and have thought about that many times in my life. How many times am I the child in that situation where God is trying to say, man, if you would just give me that, if you would put that in my hands, if you would put your health in my hands, if you would put your marriage in my hands, if you would put your finances in my hands, if you would just trust what I'm calling you to do, watch what I will do with it. and watch the healing that will come. Listen, this ain't no prosperity message. Sometimes that healing and sometimes that fruit and sometimes that multiplication and sometimes that abundance comes on this side of heaven. Sometimes it don't. There's martyrs all around the world. All right, they're trusting God. It doesn't seem like it works out right in front of them. But in the economy of God's kingdom, in the end, some kind of way, what we know is whenever we trust God with our obedience, in some kind of way, he is glorified. It is for our joy, and it is going to be the very best thing for us. So for this weekend, I want to tell you to do this. This is our big idea this weekend. God calls us to trust him with everything that we have. Listen, here's a way to think about this today. Do you want to grow? Do you want to mature? Do you want to be in the same place next year as you are this year? Okay, then hear this. We will mature in proportion to our trust in God. As we trust him to go into the arenas that grow us, that is where we will gain the faith muscle, the strength, the trust, and it's where the abundance in our life in terms of our relationship with God will come from. So, yeah, Christians, one concept to mature you is wrapped up in trusting him, and that's what this story, as shocking as it is, as galvanizing, as divisive even, as it can be in terms of people that are believers being on one side of how they see it and people that aren't on another. Man, you can't read this story and come out with any other conclusion other than we're either going to trust God with what we have because he's good, or I don't believe any of it. It's going to have to be one of those two. All right, let's get into it. Here we go. Genesis chapter 22. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. And he said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering in one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Footnote that in your mind. Go somewhere you don't know. Go somewhere that I will tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering. And he rose and he went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and he saw the place from afar off. Now, this is a wonderful story that many of us know because there's a lot of church background in a church like Mercy Hill, but not everybody's got that background, right? Every week in every service, probably at every campus, there are people who are like, man, I don't know. I'm opening the Bible. I don't know a lot about this. Great. Okay, we're here to help you grow just like we're all trying to grow. So let me give you a little bit of background and context here. Abraham is a big deal. Abraham's a big deal in the Old Testament. He's a big deal in the whole Bible, right? And one of the reasons he's a big deal is because there comes a moment in the beginning of the Bible where it looks like any of us, if we were in God's seat, thankfully we're not, probably just would have wiped their hands and been done with the whole thing. And instead of that, what we get is God calling Abraham in Genesis 12. See, God created the world in perfection. We broke it in rebellion. That was the story of Adam and Eve. But it just kind of snowballs from there if you go back and read the first 12 chapters of the Bible. So you end up with all this sin all over the world, and you got, the flood comes, and in a sense, God is cleaning the earth and establishing a new family again. But man, at the same, humans are still humans, and it falls right back into this whole deal where the whole world comes together in order to not worship God, but really to kind of exert their dominance and say, hey, we're just as good as God, in a story called the Tower of Babel. And there's another big judgment that comes, except the difference in the story of the Tower of Babel is there's not a family like Noah that's exempt. This is a judgment that goes over the entire world. And at the end of that story, what you kind of think is, okay, if you're just reading, it's like, man, how long is God going to, at some point, is he just going to give us what we deserve, and just kind of wipe. And instead, what we have is Genesis chapter 12. Remember, I told you to footnote Genesis 22 too, because it'll remind you of something here. But just read with me. Look what it says in Genesis 12. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house, listen, to the land that I will show you. Didn't he say that in Genesis 22 again? See, there's a lot of parallels here. I will make you a great nation and will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. See, what I want you to see first off is that in Abraham's life, there's a moment that happens. Now, I don't know, there's no way to know this exactly, okay? But probably there's a moment that happens when he's around 75 years old. All right, that part can be more known. The other part part is there's a thing we're about to get into here with Isaac and the sacrifice of Isaac. We don't know exactly how old he was, but it's probably like 40 or 50 years difference, okay? And 40 or 50 years difference, and yet God is into the same thing with Abraham, and that is what? Go to where I show you. Trust me enough to take steps up the mountain even though you don't know exactly how the outcome is going to go. Don't you find that to be something that's just riveting, to think about a God who wants to woo us and be in relationship with us and take us to a deeper place and a deeper place and a deeper place all the days of our life? I mean, think about it like this. Our relationship with God is dynamic. It is the opposite of static. When we're like, man, 10 years ago I was this and I made this decision and now that's kind of been it. It's like, man, that's not what God is doing. Think about Abraham's life. God is bringing him to places over and over again where he is continuing to work in him and work through him. Y'all, I've referred to this before, but I'm going to tell you, one of the great concerns that I have in my Christian life, in the Christian life that I see people living out, and in my, you know, what I've been given to do as a shepherd and lead people, and one of the things that almost scares me sometimes is how people will think about their relationship and fervency with God, and it's okay to them that those things are in the past. My relationship was deep. I was moving. I was running. I was involved in the mission, and that was 10 years ago, and I'm just okay with that. Guys, I've seen college students who were trying to reach the world when they were 22 that now are wrapped up in the world when they're 32. I've seen retirees that, man, were on mission with their kids when they were in high school and now they've totally checked out, you know? And it's like, man, how does that happen? Because none of us are immune to something like that happening. I'm not immune to it. And I think about what happens in a life like that, in a story like that, and really probably, I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen, obviously, but something like this happened at some point. God is continuing to take us to a deeper place and a deeper place, and then one day we just kind of say, that's about good. That's about all I want to do. That's about all. That's about as far as I want to go. And we just get frozen and it's static instead of being a dynamic relationship. What did God do in Genesis 12? I'm going to tell you. In Genesis 12, God was calling Abram then out, and he was saying to him, I want you to give me your context. I want you to give me your past. I want you to give me your relationships. In Genesis 12, God is saying, hey, give me your relationships. Trust me with that. When I say give me, that's what I mean. Trust me with that. In Genesis 22, what is he doing? Now he's saying, give me your future. Give me your past, give me your future. Don't you understand today? God is always calling us to the mountain that he will show us. Our faith is built in every turn, and God is interacting with us. There's more to learn. There's more mission to be done. There's maturity to gain. There's character to grow in every phase of the game, in every turn. This is what God has for us. We would not be the same person next year or the same church next year as we are this year. But if we get frozen, man, we really don't even stay frozen. We start moving backwards. I heard this one time. I think it's pretty good. You know, life is a lot like a down escalator, okay? I don't know if you guys remember, you know the difference in elevator and escalator, right? Escalator is like the stairs that are going up and down. I'll never forget when me and Anna were brand new parents, and we were like, you know, we had Hattie Jo in the stroller. She's like 6 months old. I come up to an escalator. I don't know. I've never done it with a stroller before. I try to get on that thing, and I start slipping and falling. And I almost sent her just flying straight down the thing. And we're all like in a kind of a stew about it. And this little eight-year-old kid walks up to me, and he slaps the sign right on it and points to it. And he looks at me, and he goes, it says no strollers. No strollers. I'll never forget that. But you know, the escalator, it goes down and goes up, right? Life is a down escalator. You say, what do you mean by that? Okay, if you're not striving in your health, does it get better or does it get worse? There's no static nature to it. It's not like, well, I just stand here. No, you're on a down escalator. If you're not straining against the world, if you're not straining your body and creating resilience in your body, what's it going to do? It's just going to kind of, I think about this with houses. You know, well, we live Summerfield. You can get a little more in the rural areas up in kind of Rockingham County and stuff. And you'll just see houses that are just totally, they've just been, I don't know, it's almost they've just been like assumed back into the landscape. I mean, you know, you're driving by and you kind of look through the woods and you're like, man, that house is just, what happened? Somebody didn't live there, and when somebody wasn't there, everything didn't stay the same. If somebody wasn't there fighting back the forest, if somebody wasn't there fixing the gutters, if somebody wasn't there keeping the water flowing, it doesn't stay static, right? It goes backwards. It's a down escalator. Our lives are that way. Man, our faith is that way. If we're not growing, we're slowing. If we're not growing, we're not staying still. We're moving backwards. This is the point that I want to make just right off the point here, right off the bat here. I love the fact in this story that God is not done with Abraham when he's 75, 100, 120. He's not done with him, and he's not done with you. He's not done with me. My question for us is this: are we open to what God is doing next in us and through us? Are we having our hands open? Now, here's what's crazy. I immediately want to say, man, I'm open to that, right? I want that. I want to be a different place. I want to grow. I want to, okay, well, do we really? Because look at what it takes. I mean, we're gonna go through the pain of sacrifice to get into that arena to grow our faith. We all want it until maybe it's like right on us, right? I mean, look what it says. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father, "Abraham, my father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for burnt offering, my son." Wait, is that actually what he's saying? Let me read it one more time. Or does he say it more like this? "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." You understand what I'm saying? It's a little bit ambiguous there. Is he saying, "Isaac, you're the lamb"? Or is he saying, "Oh, God will provide a lamb"? So obviously I have an opinion on this. We'll talk about it. So they went both of them together. Now, at least I think we should kind of just say this. I mean, we want to grow, right? We want to be different. We want to be deeper. Okay, but look what it takes. Man, it takes God taking us to a place of sacrifice. It takes God taking us to a place where we open up our hands. I mean, this is what he was doing in Genesis 12. "Give me your past." Genesis 22, "Give me your future." "So take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you." We want to grow on one hand, but do we want a life of continually transferring our stuff, what we perceive as our stuff, man, our family, our career, our time, our talent, our treasure, and we're transferring it from our hand into God's hand? Because that's what we're seeing him do here. And I know, listen, for some of us, you've been a Christian for a long time. I've been in the church forever, okay? Man, we would do Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night, Wednesday night. You know, I've been there forever. Maybe some of you guys were like that as well. This story loses its shock value to us because we've heard it so many times. Put yourself in the shoes of probably somebody that's here today, of someone who's never heard this before. God did what? He told Abraham to go on the mountain and to sacrifice his son? You know, and I think about how that shock value has led many people astray. One of them is very notable. There's a notable atheist who writes about this, and I'm just going to let the cat out of the bag. There's just a very fundamental, small, theological misunderstanding, okay? And we're going to talk about what it is. But if you're not careful, it will lead you to that place. How could God do this? One notable atheist said it like this. "His murdering knife was already in his hand when an angel dramatically intervened with the news of a last-minute change of plan." I think I've ruined the story here, okay, if you didn't know. But God was only, and he says this, "and God was only joking after all about all of this stuff that he was going to do with Isaac, tempting Abraham and testing his faith. This disgraceful story is an example simultaneously of child abuse and bullying in two asymmetrical power relationships and the first recorded use of the Nuremberg defense. Of course, I was only obeying orders." Now, that might be where you are today. You've looked at stories like this and you're just like, man, I how could I serve a God like that? Can I just submit to you today that it's funny to me that people can build a platform, write books, and there's just a very small, not even all that complicated misunderstanding that they just missed at the beginning of it, and then they get all this kind of, and maybe that's where you are. You see a story like this and you're like, how could God, and then all of a sudden maybe there's one little nugget that comes in and changes the whole narrative for you. I hope that that's what's about to happen to you. But here's the little narrative that I want you to understand. Abraham already knows from God that Isaac has a future. God has already promised him that. Do you remember, many of us are like, man, I wish I could muster up the courage to be like David, to go out and fight Goliath. Well, had God already told you you're anointed to be king and that hadn't happened yet? See, there's a faith component. David doesn't walk out in this misguided, I just know God's going to do this for me because of whatever. David walks out knowing, Goliath can't defeat me. God has called me and told me that I will be the king. There is a faith component, not misguided. It's saying, God, you've been crystal clear with your word, and I'm either going to trust that or I'm not going to trust that. That's what they miss. Y'all, in Genesis chapter 17, God says, as clear as a bell, through Isaac, there will be many, many nations that are blessed. He will become a father of nations, in a sense. I mean, Abraham's a father of nations, but you know what I'm saying. And we see that throughout the scripture. We see that happened. So now it's not this moment of, God, what are you doing, with nothing attached to it in terms of a promise. It's a moment of, God, I don't know what you're doing, but you've already given me something to hold on to. You've given me a promise even in this moment. See, the principle here, what we're talking about is sacrifice and what you're going to give up. But the principle is, will you trust God's word? And I want you to understand that Abraham had a full conviction about what God was going to do. Now, he didn't know how it was going to happen. But how do I know that Abraham knew for sure that Isaac was going to some kind of way come out of this? Either God was going to save him, God was going to resurrect him. I don't know exactly what he was thinking.